practices. But really, oftentimes we overlook just how many of even our agricultural products are relying on native bees. Sometimes our native bees are actually more efficient pollinators for some of those crops, especially a lot of fruit trees. We really need to have native pollinators like mason bees, for instance, pollinating those trees to successfully have a good crop. So honeybees are shipped around the U.S. They're oftentimes, they can introduce basically diseases and parasites into native bee and wild bee populations. And also in the off season, when honeybees are not being used in agricultural landscapes, they sometimes are moved into public lands, even forests, and allowed to just use resources there in the off season. And they can actually compete with those native species or even impact their health negatively by introducing those diseases and parasites by just being around them. We do see sometimes direct competition too for floral resources. So if people do have honeybees, we encourage them to plant about an acre of flowers for each hive they have, which is a little bit daunting, but it's really something you need to think about supply and demand when you introduce honeybees. You're, by putting in a hive, you're creating a ton of demand, a lot of mouths to feed. So you really need to compensate for that introduction of more bees and make sure that you're creating a good ecosystem to support all these new creatures. And so many people will tell me, like when I'm tabling, they say, oh, I want to save the bees. I want to get a hive for my backyard. And we really do not encourage that. We encourage you to plant native plants, leave the leaves, let those dead stems stay up all winter, throw in a couple logs, have some bare soil. And as we mentioned, consistent floral resources from early spring, late winter through late fall. That's kind of the key time of year that we need floral resources. And then, you know, if you grow it, they will come. You do not need to, as you said, build anything or buy anything. Just creating that natural system, every year you'll see more and more bees show up, both the number of bees and how many species of bees you see in your yard. I've been adding native plants to my yard year after year, and every year I see more bee species, and I can't even ID them all. Many of them are quite difficult to ID, but I can tell there's more species, and it's such a rewarding process. And I do still have honeybees. I see honeybees come through my yard, but my focus is those native plants that I know are going to support those native bees. So I know they're getting the nutritional resources they need to have a healthier life. And I keep adding more of those flowers to make sure they have enough to get by.
We'll be this good land of winter. I just want to be clear. If you've got a honeybee hive, we love you. We love the honeybees. We love your honey. We love all of it, just so long as everybody knows the difference. And if you want to do something to support native bees, native habitat, it's less expensive than getting a honeybee hive. But again, we love all your hives. We love all your honey. Just want to be super crystal clear about that. Laura, what do you hope will come from the work you're doing right now in 10 years?
I just really hope to help communities have hope and understand what they can do to help. I know environmental work can be very daunting, and it's easy to become cynical when you see habitat loss or species loss. But the good news is there is so much we can do to help, and there's so much low-hanging fruit as far as actions we can take. So my goal is to make sure communities feel empowered to take action immediately and on a continual basis to improve their ecosystems within their cities and schools to support native species and understand just how, you know, it's almost like voting, where one vote may not feel like a lot, but it really does add up. And I want people to understand, you know, we can all take a few actions and that net gain is really humongous. And I mean, and I think really this is a way we can create a culture of environmentalism within our cities with Bee City and Bee Campus. And that's really special to me, because the only way we see positive environmental change, I believe, is by people feeling like they have personal stewardship over the natural world, how they have personal responsibility to help, and that they understand their lives are intertwined with the natural world, that we are animals and we are part of the ecosystem, whether we're in a city or not. So there's always something we can do to change our behaviors and actions to be a, to work with that ecosystem and help that ecosystem do better. And I don't know, and just I want people to find joy and celebration with Bee City and Bee Campus. I want them to continue to feel enthusiasm and pride for their conservation work, and to understand that in the face of many big threats to many species, that they did something good and they are helping, they're part of a solution, and that they've kind of united their community in a way that feels healthy and positive and constructive.
I love how you just talked about that, because I want to share a story. I want to share a Xerces story. So I get to go to, I'm a volunteer, right? And so I get to go to different places. I volunteer to go to different places that are not in my hometown to do little presentations or to table. But the most unforgettable thing that I've ever done is go to the White Salmon Washington Grange Hall fundraiser last summer, where the people were trying to fundraise for a new roof on the Grange Hall, right? And going inside that building, it's just this old wooden building, and it had pictures and banners and stuff going back 100 years. And I'm going to give a slideshow about butterflies. Are you kidding me right now? And the room filled up. The room filled up with people, and people were totally interested in what I had to say. And then in the end of it, these little, like a dozen little toddlers dressed up like bees did a little dance in front of everyone. And I realized, you know, the people in that room definitely did not all vote for the same president. They voted for different things, right? And they maybe have different values. White Salmon, it's just an incredible community out there. Wonderful people, part of the Columbia Gorge. But they made more money than their goal to re-roof the building. And I felt so honored to be just a visitor into this community of people who, just like you said, they've got different values, probably coming to vote for different people. I keep bringing that up. But everybody was proud of their building. They were proud of what they were doing in their yard to make it friendly so that butterflies and pollinators, bees, would thrive there. And it blew my mind. Like, that is not what I thought was going to happen out there.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it is such a gift to be a part of these, get to visit these communities and see what they're doing.
Right. So, okay. So back to Bee City. What's on the table for you guys right now? What are you working on now that our listeners can participate in?
Yeah, well, I just real quick wanted to mention some stats on Bee City and Bee Campus to give you a sense of the scale of the work that our affiliates are doing. Since 2019, they've engaged 1.7 million people in pollinator conservation throughout the U.S. They have implemented over 7,000 habitat projects across over 18,000 acres, and they've held almost 9,000 events. So that's just in the last half decade. So there are so many ways people are taking action. So I would encourage everyone who wants to help out and participate to just Google Bee City USA and look at our map of affiliates. We have a list of current affiliates, and you can see where we're located, who our current affiliates are, and you can reach out to beecityusa@xerces.org if you want help connecting with any of your Bee Cities or Bee Campuses, if you aren't sure how to reach them. And then if you see that your community is not a Bee City or Bee Campus, but are interested in making your community a Bee City or Bee Campus, you can also reach out to us. You can see all of our commitments on the website and our application steps, but we're here to support, and we can meet with your community and do a presentation to a community group or city council and just go over what Bee City and Bee Campus is. And then we can also even just give your community tips on what you can do, whether or not you choose to join. There's no pressure, but we do accept applications year round if you're interested.
Can people ask you to come and speak to their group?
We mostly do remote events, but sometimes we can show up in person in the Pacific Northwest, especially. But I do occasionally get to travel. I've gone to 3 different states in the last 3 years. So we do some stuff in person as well. And we, of course, have our wonderful ambassadors at the Xerces Society who can help out with some of those events, tabling and speaking as well. So if Bee City itself, if we're not available, sometimes the ambassadors can attend.
Mm. It's just one of those times when supporting some of the tiniest little guys in society is actually a huge act.
Truly, yes.
So that's it for our show. This is Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving. Thanks to our guest, Laura Rost. You can find out more about Bee City USA online at beecityusa.org. This is Keeping It Real on KBOO Portland. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. And thanks to everyone who does that. Special thanks to KBOO Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.fm. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO FM in Portland.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Join us at the station.